have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
On today's episode, I have Tev Leverett. He is called the original business buyer advocate and founder of Partner On Call Network, LLC. For decades, Ted has been training and coaching people worldwide who wanted to find and buy the right businesses the right ways. He's not a business broker, never has been. He says, let's debunk the hype so you don't buy the wrong businesses or buy the right businesses in the wrong ways. He has so many tools, so many things out there. We're going to dive into a lot of his concepts, his ideas, his experience around working with buyers to help them do the right thing. Ted, welcome to the Business Broker Growth Show.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks.
I'm very excited for this because a lot of the conversations that I have are with business brokers, M&A intermediaries, people who are on that side, mostly focused on the listings, mostly focused on helping business owners exit their business successfully. And yet you've been in the game for a long time, but never as a broker, but always on the other side. So let's start with that. Like, why the buyer side? Why not going into the broker listing side like most do?
Well, the reason I have never been a business broker is I don't work for free. And most brokers spend an awful lot of time working on listings that are never going to sell. On my side, I get paid like lawyers and accountants, whether there's a deal or no deal.
And so where does that show up for those buyers? Because are they expecting that as a service? Is there a lot of education and helping them understand? Because you mentioned lawyers and CPAs and things like that. People know those as service professionals, but how do you make sure that buyers understand you're there to help them?
Almost 100% of the people who contact me have been on Amazon and they've read my books and they found my books on Amazon because I'm on various social media talking about buying and selling companies. I'm on YouTube, etc. And so my name's out there for people who are in this space. And if somebody even just hears my name and Googles it, and there are thousands and thousands of hits. So generally, people have read my books, I'd say 98%. When they contact me by email or DM, they're sold. They're just asking me, how do you help me deploy this information from your how-to books? So they know what my niche is. They've read exactly how I perform and what work we do. The only thing they don't know is how I price my service. But other than that, they're ready to rock and roll.
And what is it like working with buyers? What are some of the challenges you see from your side that's especially important for those brokers that are on the listing sides, you know, with what you've learned about working with the buyers?
I don't want to steal from a comment I'm going to make in a while. Mostly what I know about buyers, it's the same thing that drives brokers and sellers crazy. Typical person wanting to buy a business, first of all, they're searchers, they're not buyers. They're buyers if they ever complete a deal. They're not prepared. They're not well advised. They try the do-it-yourself route. They collect anecdotal information from various social media, books like mine, and they think that those glimpses into how things actually work will work for them. And then they talk to brokers not being yet prepared, and immediately the brokers are on the defense. They basically have to try to tell these buyers, look, you're not ready. You don't have the money. You don't have a plan. And from that point forward, guess what? It's an adversarial relationship. And I hear this from buyers. They say to me, these brokers, they're so hard to talk to. They won't listen to me. I'll cover all that today.
So when you think about the buyers, you said something about their searchers, not buyers. Is where have you seen that change over the years? I feel like right now, and maybe it's just because it's loud and in the space, is there's a lot of influencers and experts out there trying to help buyers buy businesses, telling them to buy the laundromats and the car washes and no money down and all this stuff. Is that always been the case? Have there always been those kind of courses and experts and coaches out there that are making it difficult with buyers?
It's gotten worse.
Really?
It's gotten worse. The buyer world now is an online world. before the internet, all of us, brokers, me, lawyers and accountants, we all networked together. We knew one another and we would trade leads and we would work on cases, period. When the internet came along, all of a sudden, anybody, as they say, even a dog can be good on the internet. I'll give you an example. On LinkedIn, there are dozens of people posing as advisors to buyers and sellers. These are people who last week were doing something completely different, and they read a book or they're reading postings online and they repackage it. Or nowadays, as of like a year ago, they go to AI, artificial intelligence, and they say, set me up so I can automatically respond to smart people on LinkedIn. And it appears as if they're actually writing stuff. They're not, it's all robots. So it's gotten very complicated because it's now an online world, meaning there are a lot of charlatans.
And I asked that because I know it's something you and I talked about before this, when we've met in the past. And then I also know from talking to many brokers, intermediaries dealing with the listing side, where they're just getting these messages and these assaults from these potential buyers, where it seems like they've gone through a course or bought a book or follow someone online. You know, like when the trend was about buying houses with no money down, and you just see those kind of people out there pushing that. With the buyers that you see that are successful, that are buyers, not just searchers, I know one of the things you said was the challenges of what they bring with them in their experience and their past, and what works, but also what doesn't work, what kind of baggage they have. You know, where do you see that as important with the ones that you work with, and how do you help them set themselves up for success?
The first question I ask if anybody contacts me is, have you read my books? If they say no, I say goodbye, call me when you have. So I don't bother with these people who choose to be ill-informed. And this is what I hope brokers will do. Just stop talking to these people. Waste the time. So if they don't show some ability that they've learned what they need to do. And second question I ask is, who's your team? If they don't have a lawyer who specializes in deal making, or an accountant, I'm not interested. Not interested. And by the way, I don't work on mom and pop businesses. I don't care about hair salons and the kind of stuff you drive by every day. Probably the smallest deal we would even think about would be a price of $1 million. Most of the deals we do are in the 3 to 8 or 10 million range, every now and then much bigger, but not the little stuff. And it's that little stuff. A lot of those people are going to those courses, you know, how to buy a business with no money. Hey, brokers, I am with you on this. I don't want to talk to them either.
And how do you filter that? So is it about just, you know, I know you said the book and them having their service professionals, and then it's about what they're looking for, ensuring they're not just a tire kicker, not just a searcher.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of the things that they learn in my book is to go to my website. If they go to my website, I have something. It's about a 9 or 10 point checklist. It's called the Searcher Marketing Plan. And in there, it lists 9 or 10 steps. And we all start with a Zoom. So we're in a Zoom meeting. I have that up on my screen. They have it on theirs if we're not screen sharing. And I question them, what's your resume? What's the money? What's your acquisition criteria? And most of them, it's pretty embarrassing for them because they're not prepared. And that's why I want them on that webpage, because they see they're not ready to talk to brokers. Soon as they acknowledge that in this Zoom, and that's when they lose color in their face, they say, can you help me? Bingo. And that's where the job begins. So we begin with what we call a searcher marketing plan. And we anticipate all that stuff that brokers need to know in the first conversation. We handle that. We practice that. My clients can get an Academy Award for their performance in their first meeting with brokers and sellers, because I run them through all the stuff brokers are going to run through. So in other words, they get slapped around a lot. I do the broker role playing with them. Brokers then love talking to my clients because they know if he's working for Ted, he has enough money to do the deal. It's not he might have the money, he has the money, which by the way is a requirement. I don't work with people who don't have the money to do the deal.
And the prep, what are the other benefits of a buyer working with someone like you instead of just dealing with the listing broker?
Well, that's a good question. On my website, I have a popular page for business brokers. It's called 62 Reasons for Sellers Hiring Brokers. Dozens of brokers have copied that page, and it's on their website because it promotes them. here's what buyers bring to the table. The guy who did their divorce, that's the lawyer. The accountant who did their taxes, that's their accountant. I show up and say, both of them get fired. Here's who you need. Somebody who specializes in this work. Right there is a big benefit. And then we just go from there.
Yeah. Makes sense. What's the biggest thing you see with a buyer who's gone through the process? They all of your checkpoints along the way, but they're still not ready or they're still not right. Is there anything that jumps out as far as like the buyers who maybe they did the homework, but they're still not a good fit or not right or not ready?
The process with me is that searcher marketing plan takes about 20 hours for my new client, the buyer, to handle that work. In that 20 hours, we have done a deep dive. If I tell them they are qualified, brokers will agree they are qualified. Lenders will agree they are qualified. So the first step is that marketing plan, which basically says, why should anybody pay attention to me? We show our stuff to the brokers and the lenders and the lawyers and accountants. Once they pass that test, we immediately go to search. How do we go to search? Well, I know this seems like common sense, but not everyone does this. We only go out and look for the businesses that we think sellers would be willing to sell us. So we have very narrow search parameters. We go to business brokers. We're looking for the low-hanging fruit. We say, do you have a listing like this or something similar that could capture this criteria? If the broker says yes, we jump on that because brokers got the incentive we have, get a done deal. If it's a good business, priced properly and financeable, we go to pre-LOI due diligence. If it passes our initial tests, and brokers know what that is. Everybody knows. I mean, anybody who knows anything about pre-LOI due diligence, if it passes the buyer's test, meaning we touch base with the lawyer, we touch base with the bank, we touch base with the potential lender, a deal maker, a guy like me guiding this process says, yep, we're on track. We submit the LOI, work done. At that point, as you know what happens, it goes into formal due diligence. That's a completely different ballgame.
And then last question before we move on to the next section is talk to me about the times when brokers, like the listing broker side of things, don't like you being involved. I know there's a lot of positives. I know there's a lot of good parts to you being involved, right? We both are aware of that. I think it's great. But I'm just imagining those scenarios where they don't. And I have my guesses at why they wouldn't. But I'm curious what you have experienced in all your years.
Well, I make their job easier. That's number one. They know that if they're talking to my client, if they don't serve them, that buyer is going to own a business down the road. So there's that. I'm not sure what would be more important than that. They know if they're working with me, I'm going to help them get a done deal. Now, if you're asking me, do we kill deals? Yeah. If it's a deal only a moron would go for, we're going to kill it. So look, hundreds of brokers out there know me. Hundreds. I've done deals with hundreds of them. They know that my clients are not the people they present mediocre businesses to. They know that Ted Leverett and the lawyer and accountant are going to kill that deal in the first moments. But if they can show us financeability up front and they can show us the seller is prepared and they're prepared and they treat us well, we are going to get a done deal with them. But if they're posing crap, we won't. This almost never happens. I mean, it just hasn't happened to me in decades. It did happen decades ago. I'm in Florida now, but this business basically came out of Seattle. When I was in Seattle in the early years, I'm talking decades ago, I was a broker basher. Why? Because I was a new kid on the block. Nobody ever heard of a business buyer advocate. There were only two books written on the topic back then. So I was making it up as I went along. And one of the ways I did it is I'd say, brokers are going to take advantage of you. You really need to pay, that kind of stuff. Well, that shut me out of Seattle instantly because the brokers were friendly back then, probably like they are now. And they just sent emails to one another and said, oh, we've got this idiot in town. He's a broker basher. Tell all buyers he'll take advantage of you. He'll suck your money and you won't ever get a deal. That did happen. But I figured out how to stop doing that about 27 years ago. Now I'm on the deal-making table with brokers to get the done deals as long as the deal is worthy of being done. So no brokers out there, if they know me and have seen my work, they know they can trust me. In fact, they read my books. That's how I hear about them.
And I love the story too, because we talked about this when we've spoken before, how you really just upset everybody with the mode that you were in the early days in Seattle. And then you kind of had to switch your mode and your conversations and really like put your hands out and kind of get back into the good graces in the industry. And what I appreciate about you is that you realized that and you did it and you made that evolution. Some will just blame everyone else. Some might just stop the business and say it failed because of X, Y, and Z externally. And you realize like it wasn't the right angle of the game, and that for you to be successful, to help your clients be successful, which then ultimately helps everyone be successful, now it's just a co-op thing, right? Everyone's trying to win the same game together. It's not you versus them. And if you're representing buyers in the right way, the right buyers, and it's a good listing, then everyone's going to be happy, right? You're not taking anything away from anyone for you to be successful with your buyer. So I love that you realized that and shifted, and then, you know, have evolved well past that over all these years.
Well, you know, in that first year, I always had a stomach ache. Now I was young, so I had the stamina to handle it. But I was, you know, I just sort of felt dirty and tense. And then actually it was a business broker who was friendly with me because he was a neighbor. He said, look, just chill out. Yeah, there are a lot of us brokers who you need to be careful of. Just focus on our good listings and then focus on good brokers with good listings. And if you do that, Ted, you don't have to be our opposition. We'll help you close the deal, because I get paid too when deals close. Not much. I get most of my money in fixed fees like lawyers, but sometimes I'll get a performance fee or a completion fee. So I'm motivated to get a deal done as long as it's a good one. This is why if you go online, Google Ted Leverett, no dirt, zero, no lawsuits, zero.
And I love that. And I love that advice that broker gave you, which is, you know, and I think this is the important part, is that if you're representing good buyers and then you're finding a good listing, even if it's a bad broker, but it's a good listing that makes sense and it's valuable and it's a win for the buyer, then why not, right? And then if you can find good brokers that are trustworthy, that are professionals, that are deal makers with valuable listings, then focus on those and send, you know, put those on your good list and just ignore the rest, the used car sales brokers that are just throwing crap up, you know, against the wall and seeing what happens, right? There's, you know, you don't have to be against them. Just don't, you know, you vote with your money, right? Isn't that what they say?
Most of the people who've hired me weren't born as a searcher yesterday. They've been beating around with the brokers, or they've been on various social media. Nobody, it's like going to the doctor. My knee hurts right now. I injured it. I'm not going to the doctor till I can't stand up. Nobody hires Ted until they hit the wall and realize, oh crap, I'm going to have to pay this guy because my lawyer seems to take me in the wrong direction. The accountant is a numbers guy. I need to talk to a deal maker. So that's the magic we're looking for. I think brokers owe me a lot of money, some of you. Here's why. The really lousy brokers, we've helped you close deals, you got paid, and you got paid a lot more than me. So we, now, without me, these same buyers would run from those brokers. Buyers are not tolerant of brokers. They don't. Most buyers really are suspicious of brokers. They don't. I don't think they need to be as suspicious as they are, but they are. So if you don't perform for them, you don't. They just walk away. If I'm there and it's a good deal, I telephone the broker or email them nowadays. And I say, hey, look, here's the issue. You really pissed off my guy. We want the company. Can you just chill out a little bit? And they'll say, well, what do you want? And I'll say, I don't know. Why don't you and I now make a list of what we need to do to get this deal done? You tell the seller, I'll tell the buyer, and let's cut this crap of worrying about the personalities. And I'll have my buyer be a little nicer. And that's what gets the deals done.
And I think that's the key, right? And the buyer's having some representation, which is you, and then being able to get deals done. I think it's the fundamental thing that's true in many other industries that are similar to this, like real estate agents, loan officers. The barrier to entry is so low to be in the business, to call yourself that title, that it doesn't mean you actually know what you're doing or you're qualified or you're a professional. That comes if you choose to be, and if you have the experience and the education, you put in the learning time. But you can do very little to call yourself a broker and try to get a listing, which is, you know, probably what those buyers are experiencing when they're coming across that. So let's move to the next part, because I'm excited about this, because I know that we've talked about it and you have some ideas here. And so this is the business broker growth playbook section. So this is your I hate using the word hacks, but it's true. The hacks, the tips, the ideas for brokers growing their pipeline and growing their business. Now, what's interesting and fascinating is you've spent your whole career, like we've been talking about, on the buyer side and never a broker, but you have the fun distinction of seeing tons of brokers from an unbiased standpoint and basically seeing which ones are successful, which ones aren't, what's working, what's not working. And so you have this third party view of the broker world, like myself, except many more decades of experience. And so let's get into these. So I'd love to know your top strategies, your top tips, your top things for brokers who want to grow their pipeline and be successful in that standpoint. So what's the first one on your list? Might not be number one, but what's the first one on the list?
Oh, no, it's number one. Let's start with it. And after I talked to you about doing this podcast, that next morning, I read an article that just blew me away, and it's how it became number one on this list. There's a sales trainer out there, world renowned. Her name is Sherry Levitin. Here's what she says to people in sales, business brokers, me, all of us. Too many people think about the sales process instead of the buying process. And, you know, I read that and I thought, wait a minute, that's what all this is about. Brokers want to know how to close more deals and they want to know what goes wrong with buyers. Well, I'll tell you what I see with brokers. And this fits into what Sherry says about focusing on the selling process, not the buying. Another way to look at it is what's in it for them, not just me, if you're the broker. What most brokers do is they pitch their listing thinking that has enough legs. It doesn't. We can talk more about that later. Three things. There are a lot of brokers who are good at attracting what? Searchers. And they're good at even motivating those searchers to take a see at the business. So that's just that little touchy-feely conversation. The second group of brokers, well, they're good at helping actually sell the business. But guess what? Like Sherry says, few brokers are good at marketing and sales. In fact, one of the leading business brokerage organizations out there in training, been around forever, that's where these people go for their training, last month sent a newsletter out and said, we need to help you get that right. There's a big difference between marketing, which means attracting buyers, and selling businesses. What I like to talk about is that last group. What is this going to take to make the sale?
And I think it's great that you're bringing this up as the first one. One of the standpoints is that as humans, we're all pretty self-centered. And so we think everything is about us and the world revolves around us, which is somewhat true, but not true. And so salespeople, which business brokers would be some, they just think it's all about me and what I'm selling. And it's from that perspective, which is wrong. And there's so many reasons why it's wrong in this era, especially with internet and technology, but that buyer's journey is more important than the sales part. Nobody cares about salespeople. Nobody cares about, you know, that part. The buyers just want what they want in their experience. And so what do you have for examples? Where do you see that, especially when it's done right? If you're listening to this and thinking, I need this level of authority, I just don't have time to build it, that's exactly what business broker growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. That's what we do here. We build that whole thing for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and the authority signals, everything we've talked about here on the podcast. So if you want to add impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it could look like for your business. What do you have for examples? Where do you see that, especially when it's done right?
I'll start with when it's done wrong. Here's what turns off buyers. It's the first moment, brokers. They go to your website and you say, sign the NDA. Okay, I advise my clients with their lawyer, sign all these NDAs, except what we're presented with are one-sided NDAs that protect only the broker and seller. So guess what? If you provide a buyer that and they're under duress signing it, your trust has gone out the window or flushed down the toilet. At that point, they know they can't trust you, period. Use mutual NDAs. The other thing is the brokers, they just don't stay in touch. They don't show they care. And so these are those soft issues about, think about what's in the buyer's mind, the psychological issues. And I can cover that in a little while because I have a few good tips on it. There's something else out there. The average age of, I went to, not LinkedIn, to AI. And I said to AI, what's age got to do with it? What's age? The prevailing age range for people selling the businesses that I get involved with, those lower mid-market businesses, is 58 to 62 years old. We'll round it off to 60. Buyers, 20 years younger. You're talking one whole generation apart. And that creates generational disparities. It makes buyers crazy. They don't understand it's normal. And from the beginning, they're not trusting brokers and sellers. When I'm on the team, what I'm telling you is what I tell them. Look, there will be valuation gaps. Sellers are looking at their emotional involvement, their blood, sweat, and tears when they're forcing the buyer to price the business. But you know, these younger buyers, they don't look at it that way. All they care about, where's the money going to come from for my return on investment? Don't talk to me about yesterday. Show me the sustainable competitive advantages. That gap right there makes brokers and sellers and buyers crazy. Someone like me tries to settle that down. Hey, even what about this? The digital versus in-person meetings. This is a big one. These 38-year-old guys, and most of my clients are 35 to 45. Everything's online. Everything. And you asked me, could we have a phone number? I got rid of my telephone when AI started. It was like, I'm done with that. Everything now is digital. We use Zoom meetings or this kind of a platform. Well, these small business owners are not accustomed to that. It's not how they live their life. So brokers who don't have this in their mind that there's this generational disparity, the buyer may not be complaining up front, but they're complaining to me. And if they don't have me, then it's just why they don't trust. They just don't have the trust. And we're going to, by the time we're done, I hope to show how to get that trust.
That makes sense. I could see that with the generational side, the one-sided NDAs, the just all of that makes sense. And so what about when it's done right?
Well, when it's done right, the brokers, and we're talking about that first online contact where a buyer has played around on bizbuysell.com, for example, and they see a listing that tempts them. They click it, and up will come something that says, give us a buyer profile and sign this NDA. And if we like what we see, we will send you a confidential information memorandum. I have no problem with that. I believe brokers need to screen out searchers even more than they already do. So I think that's wonderful. Here's where shit hits the fan and it's not good. The broker gets it back. And of course, he got eight others that same day. And he's busy with two other listings. He's got a seller who's, you know, complaining about a buyer. In other words, the broker's world is so chaotic, a day or two goes by. Guess what? Searchers are like babies or puppies. When they have to eat or poop, it means now. So if you get that NDA signed and you get that buyer profile that they don't like filling out, you know, name, address, phone number, how much money you have, what's your career, none of them like it. If you don't get back to them fast, they're mad at you. And guess what they're also doing? They're now in a festival. They're clicking everything else on Biz Buy Sell and they're shotgunning that out. This is a big mistake for buyers who do it, but they do it because they are not patient. You need to get back to them lickety-split, nicely.
And it's true, right? Because now in this era, which, you know, the brokers might not fully be realizing it, the business sellers might not be realizing it, but thanks to technology and thanks to what we have within our hands, our arms reach at all times, we expect everything instant, right? If something I order online takes more than a day or two, I'm unhappy, right? And I think most people, especially your general buyer demographic age, is used to everything occurring and happening instantly. And so that delay just feels like forever. And then it's just going to make someone move on or feel like they're dealing with someone who's not on top of it. And yeah, I could see that being a big deal.
Could I give you three good tips since you asked?
Yeah, let's go.
I operate on the hurt and then rescue field of marketing. If people don't feel the problem, they're not looking for the solution. Brokers, if you just do these three things, you will differentiate yourself. Believe me, almost no brokers are doing this well. Number one, listen more than talk. I know, your mom told you that. It's not just listening, it's repeating back and showing you understand the buyer's perspective. You don't have to agree with it, and you also don't have to tell them that up front. String them along for a while. Remember, these buyers are presenting to you what they think you need to hear. You're not really getting to know that person, so you don't need to reveal what you don't like yet, because guess what? Sometimes people with money who can do the deal, they have abrupt personalities, and you need to fish a little bit to find out who they really are. Spend some time. They'll love you for it, because most brokers don't. Number two, reliable. Do what you're going to promise and do it on time. I hear the complaint almost every encounter with brokers. I sent the email. He responded. He said you'd get back to me by Friday. It's now been 2 weeks. Guess what these buyers do? Trust me, there are I'm not going to name them in this show, but there are online venues where people complain about brokers. The big one is Reddit, but I mean, there are some more private ones just for our world. Brokers who do that, they get named, they get shamed. This is not smart. So do what you say you're going to do. Know they're impatient. Do it on time. The final one, three, clarity. You know what? We don't like surprises. Just tell us, what's the scope? What are the steps? And what are the timelines? Give us just those three things. Buyer, I expect you to do these four things in the following order by Friday. If you cannot, and that's what brokers say. What they could continue to do is say, can you do it? And if the buyer says, well, I have a job, or you know, I'm not that kind of person, I just can't go that fast. This is where the negotiation starts. Well, what would work for you? This is really important. When brokers say to and sellers, when they say to buyers, well, what could I do to satisfy you? All of a sudden you get to the truth. We don't hear that all the time. I know this sounds, these brokers, if we were listening to this, I know if you're not one of these people, you're going, oh, why are they wasting time on it? Well, this is the world.
And it goes back to your initial part of this, which is to focus on the buyer's journey and the buyer's process versus the seller's process or the broker's sales mode.
That's a good point. All my clients get an action plan. They pretend it's theirs, but it came from me. And what it says, and brokers love it because it's only been tested a couple thousand times, is I'm the buyer. I know you're talking to a lot of idiots. I'm not one of them. Here's exactly what I want to do, when I'm going to do it, and who's going to help me, and when they're going to do it. So we spell it out. And the broker goes, holy cow. Now, the broker at that moment knows, don't show this guy any crummy listing. The other thing we do with brokers, because most of them don't have what we want, they do not have what we want because we're buying businesses larger than most brokers represent. But we know that brokers are, they're prospecting amongst all sellers. So we're looking for that broker who may not have the listing, but he knows the guy we need to meet. And he'll go to that seller and say, hey, I got a hot one here. He's not interested in any of my inventory. He's going to be all yours. Give me a one-party listing. And we tell brokers that. They say, get one-party listings for us. If it's a good deal, we're done.
That's great.
We'd rather have a broker, but unfortunately, more than half the time, we have to go out direct because my clients will be older than me or maybe dead before they do a deal. So they, if we pass through the broker crowd and they're just not ready for us, we ask them to keep us in mind and then we immediately go direct. We contact the owners of the businesses we hope are not for sale and we say, could we talk to you about what we have in mind that's going to make you a lot of money and give us an opportunity and we'll sign NDAs and do anything you need to protect it. You're going to love it. Your lawyer's going to love it. Your bank's going to love it. And this is the script. This is what we say. And owners say, well, prove it. What do they do? What everybody else does. They Google my buyer clients. They Google me for sure. And what I say to brokers or sellers, go read my books. Read them. You won't find a negative thing about brokers or owners in there. You'll only find ways to make deals happen. It didn't have to be how to buy the right business. It could be how to buy or sell the business. That's a big selling point, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, I think that's great. And all of this is tip number one that you had about focusing on the buying process, and so much in there. I just took a lot of notes. I think this is super valuable. Anything else on that, or are you ready for tip number two? I can only imagine what's left on the list.
Well, I think what we ought to be talking about is what I call number two. Get it right up front. Price it to sell it. Brokers, here's the big complaint. I hear this from buyers all the time. The price of a listing only goes down when they have to. And that's after it's been on the market for so long that the seller and broker have been slapped around so much that all parties are just like sick of it. I have very specific tips for brokers on how they can stop that crap and just nail the price as the listing goes live. If you want to hear those three or four tips, I'll give them to you.
Let's go.
Here's the soundbite. If it's financeable, it's saleable. Period. Even junk, even lousy businesses. If it's financeable, saleable. So what? Number one, run a financing scenario. Go to your likely lenders. They do give you their template. You don't actually physically go to them, but you know what lender A and B are going to want if you submit a package. And you say to your seller and to the buyer, here are two lenders that we commonly see involved in deals, and here are the parameters you're going to have to comply with. So it won't matter what you and a seller think the price and terms are. You're going to have to comply with that. So now we don't have to argue. We just show the numbers. And that becomes the no debate, the justification. Because if a buyer or seller says, well, I don't like that. Well, if it's pre-listing, the seller should tell that owner to go pound sand. If it's after listing, the broker should say, didn't I tell you the lender's rule? Didn't I tell you that? Kind of like when you want to buy a house, you can have any price you want, but the mortgage determines the down payment. The third one, I got just two. The third one is keep in mind that how it's financed is going to affect the price. There are books out there that I've read that show the data, the higher the seller financing, the higher the sale price. So set that broker up front with your sellers. You need to be prepared to seller finance. Don't wait to negotiate it, use it as. And the final one is for brokers, just walk away from searchers and buyers who don't get it. If you have to do what I'm doing right now, folks, don't waste your time on them. You know what it's going to be like. All we want is when we see that sim, we're going to run it through that lender's financing model. I'll talk about that more later. If it passes, we want to buy that business. Now it's just a matter of you show us why we should buy it.
Got it. So number three on the list, I'm going to guess, is regarding some financing.
Well, again, we got to go back to financing, because remember, where's my note? I made a note of this, something about financing. If it's financeable, it's saleable. So how about financial readiness? Brokers are not very good, a lot of them, at qualifying the sellers. The seller has to say, if I'm a broker, I will carry paper, period. If they don't, I'm not sure why I'd take that. In the small market, the lower middle market. I just don't know why. Because the SBA guaranteed lenders, they're being forced for seller financing. So just get that out of the way up front. Doesn't that just make sense? We call it speaking the language of financing. And the one that we look at is called debt service coverage ratio, DSCR. Remember, almost all buyers need financing, and most sellers don't want to provide that financing. Brokers, you need to bridge that upfront with your listings. If the business is not bank ready, we're not interested. No matter how good it is, not interested.
Got it. Now, I know that you said about walking away from buyers, unqualified, unmotivated, you know, the potential buyers, but what about the seller side for brokers?
Well, as I say, it depends on what time of year, but at least half of the deals that my clients complete, no broker. We start there. We give it a month or two, but you know, birthdays are coming up. We don't want another year. So at that point, we go direct. When we go to direct, we say to the sellers, here's what we're going to do. Here's the timeline. Here's who's going to be involved. Show us your team, because if we know you, and by the way, we push this one real hard, we say, just do yourself a favor and ask the business brokers who the good lawyers and accountants are. We know you're talking to the brokers. You may not want to list with them, but at least ask them who they are, or go online to like LinkedIn and say, who are the nice guys? Who are the lawyers and accountants who are not reckless deal breakers. There are people who, if it's a good deal, they'll really help you get it done. If sellers won't do that for us, we say, call us when you've got that person. Because they know it's a waste. We know it's a waste of our time. Yeah. I'm not sure this is coming through. Most buyers might not be able to do this because they don't know how to generate enough leads. My clients do. So if we don't have a broker or seller who from the get-go will lay out a plan we can all agree on that's fair, we pass because we know they're like buses. Another one will be by in 5 minutes.
And then what else? I think that's like four. Do you have a fifth one on the list? I feel like there's a lot of tips, yeah. Which is awesome.
This is another one that pisses off buyers. But when it's done right, we love them. I can remember that time 4 or 5 years ago, I think, when it was done right. Effective gatekeeping. Hey, folks, gates swing two ways. So your job, brokers, is to be the conduit, not the gatekeeper. You see, good brokers do not block direct buyer-seller interactions. So what do the good brokers do? They say to both sides, I'm going to set the agenda, confidentiality, timelines, etc. And then they're going to say, my job is to keep you two talking to one another. And they actually try to do that instead of stepping away. And the third thing, this is the big one, let the human element run. Likeability and trust and chemistry do its work. And nothing pisses off brokers more, or at least as much as is being told by the broker, and they do it up front. You'll never talk to that seller alone. Or in fact, you'll never talk to him at all. Everything runs through me. But right now you're the enemy. It's just stupid. We like brokers to say, hey, look, this is a competition. This is an auction. Whether you know it or not, we're looking for other buyers. So you can do anything you want from us, but we don't wait for anybody. We like it when they say that. And if they get another hot one, we'll say, well, are you at the LOI stage yet? And if they say yes, we'll say, well, should we just check out for a while? Oh, they get real panicky then. And we say, well, look, here's what we have in mind. So we like to use a very informal, Ted does, a very informal communication with brokers, not like lawyers and accountants, not like the quality of earnings guys where it's all about the money, the numbers. That's not me. I tell my clients, if you're going to spend time looking at numbers, I'm not your guy. Deals are made on non-financials. If a business has a history of profit, we don't give a shit about it anymore. Oh, now what we want to know are what are the financials, the relationships with the customers, the employees, the landlord, the bank, and suppliers. You show us that, and if it's making money, we'll find a way to finance it. The non-financials. So brokers, pitch that. Otherwise, you get the accountant and Q of E points of view about how did you post this and nonsense. I know I'm being outspoken, but you know what? My career's only got a few more years. I just want to deliver some value. These brokers have helped me my whole career, other than that first year. So I'm trying to pay back, okay?
And I appreciate it. I'm glad that you're here, and I will give you all the soapbox you want. I think all the stuff you're saying is so valuable out there. And one of the big things that I've realized from the time when I started the podcast and had the concept of what I wanted the podcast to be about, which was, you know, marketing, pipeline filling, it's the Business Broker Growth Show, focused on that, to now the evolution that I've had is that I just want to help the good and great brokers succeed. And then for the bad brokers, the used car brokers, the ones who are just dabbling in it, I want them to go away. And so all of this stuff you're saying completely resonates with me from just a sales and a transaction and a relationship standpoint. And so I love all of it. Like I said, I've been taking lots of notes. I think it's going to be great nuggets for the brokers who want to step outside of themselves and not just focusing on their sales process, like we talked about, and focusing on the buyer. I mean, obviously their fiduciary responsibility is still to the seller, to that business owner, but you can't win the game without buyers. And so you've got to, you know, take into account all sides. So I love all of that. I think that's amazing stuff. I'm super excited for people to check this out. And then let's pivot somewhat, because the next segment of the show, this final segment, is the one that got away. It's the lessons of the lost deal. And I know you have seen a lot of lost deals. You've seen them from the buyer side. I know there's a lot of value in listening or learning from those experiences? I'm sure you've seen a lot of them, but what's one that jumps out that, let's say, a buyer listens to this and they find this segment and they want to learn that lesson. The listing brokers hear this and hopefully it's a cautionary tale. What comes to mind of all the type of things that you've seen?
It's very rare for the people I know, the buyers who hire me, to have deals fall apart for financial reasons, arguing about numbers. That's extremely rare. The main reason they fall apart is the way brokers and sellers treat them. They don't seem to understand that it's the relationship that makes the deals. This is why we've seen so many deals where you go, what? Somebody sold that? Well, it's because there were some human elements at play. So remember the psychology, likability, flexibility, broker likability, your flexibility is not as well as theirs. Number one reason deals fall apart are the human elements, and it didn't have to be. My job, and I know lawyers and accountants can buy into that. It's just sort of their job, but that's not my job. I am the stickiness. I'm the glue. My only job is to put tentacles out like an octopus and grabbing anything that could make the deal work, dragging it together and trying to get brokers and sellers to quit shouting at one another and collaborate. If I do that well, they close deals. And they don't like one another, so what? They're offended, so what? We want to get the deal done. So try to, I don't want to do this kind of work, by the way. I don't like that. So just behave better. How's that? Sellers and brokers. Jeez.
I think it's great, right? I think I love that last part. Just behave better. And I think what's fascinating is there's, and you remember a time, I remember a time where there wasn't unlimited information at your fingertips when you had to go seek out people and things to learn something or to get that info. You couldn't just go online and find it. And I think because there's all this information and access to things, then all that really matters anymore is now back to the human element, right? Is being good humans and just remembering what other people may want or need. And I love that you said that. And I also love that you said you don't like having to deal with dragging transactions through because of people who aren't good at the human side. But I think it's a very good point. That's what matters most. It's a good transaction will just happen. A good business for sale will happen. Like you said, if it's financeable, it will happen. It's the humans that, you know, mess it up and cause it to not happen.
Yeah. You know, unless brokers and sellers step on a good business, it's going to sell. Maybe not to the guy or woman you're talking to today. I know what you're looking for. You're looking for a war story, that lost deal. I just remember you asked me that. Okay, I do have one. It's very brief. Can I tell you?
Go for it.
All right. This is a no deal. This was a deal that should have happened. It did happen. Not with my client. Why? We should have known up the front. The buyer, my guy, signed a one-sided NDA. Hold that thought. We go through pre-LOI, formal due diligence. We hire a Q of E guys, wasting tens of thousands of bucks. We have the lawyer beginning to draft the contract. The seller's over there delighted to, woohoo, we're going to sell this deal. Seller spending money with lawyer. In fact, the lawyer for the buyer and the accountant, or the buyer and seller, we're talking to one another. So, ching, ka-ching, the legal bill was going up. Broker shows up at the 11th hour, just before the submitting of the definitive purchase agreement, and says, I got another buyer, an industry player, all cash. He doesn't give a shit about anything. He knows who you are. He's willing to pay. We got kicked out. The question somebody should ask a lawyer was, what enabled that broker to continue shopping that offer? It was a one-sided NDA, and he had no obligation to not do that. And you'll say, well, maybe in the LOI it said no shop. Oh, baloney. I mean, yeah. So that's what goes wrong. I blame it on those one-sided NDAs and brokers who do not behave what? Honestly. By the way, I'm not somebody who thinks the brokerage profession isn't professional. I'm one who thinks it is. They're just a few bad players, like in my side.
Yeah. And I think it really comes down to the, you know, setting expectations and just being clear. If you are shopping it around, making sure everyone knows, but also doing the right thing. If there's a commitment and agreement that one party's moving forward, then uphold that. So I think that's great. So for people out there listening, watching this, links will be in the show notes. Best thing to do is to find Ted online. Obviously, if you Google Ted Leverett, like he said, you're going to find him, his books, his LinkedIn, his website. The website is partneroncall.com. You can find him on LinkedIn. You can find the YouTube. You go on Amazon. You search for him. Like I said, the links will be in there. If you want to email him, you can do Ted J. Leverett at partneroncall.com. Just if you're a buyer in the market, you're interested, reach out to him. If you're a broker and you're just challenged and you're struggling with buyers, I'm sure Ted would be happy to help you refine that part and probably build a good relationship with you so that when he has a good qualified buyer, happy to make some deals happen. So Ted, one final thing, what comes to mind? Any final piece of advice, anything else maybe you didn't cover or anything you want to reiterate to leave the audience with?
Hey, brokers, you still tuned in? I say this for last, it's best. Most of the businesses, as you probably know, that any buyer looks at, even if they're wonderful, they're not going to buy. There will just be some reason, good reason, but it's still a wonderful business. Guess what we do when we meet those owners who've interviewed us and we're not going to buy their business? We say, you really need a business broker. And we name names. Just recently, we had a broker get two referrals, one from the seller that we bought and one from the buyer who bought. Two listings.
Mm-hmm. I love it. So make friends with Ted. That's the key.
Well, not me. Be nice to my client, because if you're a good broker and they're in your city and they're looking at wonderful businesses that need a broker, we're not going to recommend you up front. No, we're not going to do that. Yeah. But when we say to the seller, look, this is not going to work for you or me. Thanks for your time. You need to talk to Joe. He's one of the best brokers in Cincinnati or wherever.
Yeah, got it. Well, Ted, thank you for that last nugget. Thank you for all of this. Thank you for all of your time. I appreciate what you're doing to help the buyers be successful and, you know, help the ones that are not just the get rich quick or following the influencer or reading the hot book in the moment. So I appreciate that work and everything you shared. Ted, thanks for being here on the show and sharing all this with me today.
It's been a pleasure. Be safe out there, folks.
And for everyone tuning in, make sure you subscribe wherever you found this podcast. If you found the video, you're on YouTube, make sure to subscribe there. Got lots of episodes coming. We're going to be dropping these main episodes every 2 weeks and the after show every in between all those. So every week there will be something coming out. We appreciate you tuning in. And hopefully you found this valuable. Hopefully there was lots. I know there was a lot. Hopefully there's lots that you took away from this to help elevate your game as a business broker, M&A intermediary, to help differentiate yourself from those other ones out there that sometimes can make things difficult. And until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.